Hello, everybody. This is Georgianne Hughes, and this is The Bite Show. And we're very blessed to have David Seeloff with us. He is the Director of Associates for Scriptural Knowledge, and he does carry on the work of Dr. Ernest L. Martin. You can visit their website by going to askelm.com, askelm.com, and ELM stands for Ernest L. Martin. And you can email David Seeloff at this address, david@askelm.com, and you can catch all these audio files also by going to the Bite Show. Go to the audio library, click on David Seeloff's name, and his page will open up with tons and tons of audio files that David and I have worked on over the years. And right now, he's going to talk to us about rainbows and the flood. Hi, David.
Hi, Georgianne. Thank you for having me on again.
Oh, you're a special guy.
And rainbows have intrigued me off and on, and I'll explain why as I get into this. But basically, it didn't make any sense as to why there were no rainbows. Why did God initiate rainbows after the flood? And were there rainbows before the flood? Apparently not. But why? And in Portland, Oregon, and by the way, this presentation was published on the ASK website on February 15th, 2013, and I'm presenting this to your audience on May 11th, 2013.
Yes.
In Portland, Oregon, my wife and I try to regularly attend monthly meetings of an organization called the Design Science Association. They're local only to the Portland, Oregon area. And this organization features speakers who give very informative presentations on a variety of aspects about God's creation and Genesis and that sort of thing. The presentations and speakers this group sponsors are of very high quality, and most have advanced degrees and PhDs, many of them. And on December 12, 2012, there was a presentation by Sylvia Thompson. And her presentation was Treasures of Snow, which covered a wide range of information about different kinds of snow. It was fascinating. She made the observation that snowflakes form around a pollen or a dust particle, and that snow is actually different than crystallized water or ice. And actually, you can look at the article on the NOAA webpage. NOAA stands for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, a United States government agency. And this NOAA webpage has an article called How Do Snowflakes Form? And you can just go on there, and that will explain how snowflakes are formed. And remember, they're different than crystallized water or ice. And her statements about snowflakes forming around pollen or dust particle, and one particle, by the way, and that stuck in my memory. And talking to my wife, she told me that raindrops also do not form except around pollen and dust particles. It's not just snowflakes, but it's also raindrops. And she was correct. The United States Geological Survey has information about raindrop formation in an article called The Water Cycle, Precipitation, from the USGS Water Science School. That's the name of the article. and it's presented in the United States Geological Survey for children. But in this article, it says, quote, for precipitation to happen, first, tiny water droplets must condense on even tinier dust, salt, or smoke particles, which act as a nucleus. In other words, as a nucleus for the water drop. Water droplets may grow as a result of additional condensation of water vapor when the particles collide. If enough collisions occur to produce a droplet with a fall velocity which exceeds the cloud updraft speed, in other words, the wind and the movement of the cloud itself, then that droplet, will fall out of the clouds as precipitation. This is not a trivial task, since millions of cloud droplets are required to produce a single raindrop, end quote. Now, this is fascinating, because God is dealing with millions of droplets to produce a single raindrop, which in the aggregate form rain, and it's just all done for our sake. Now we come to rainbows, the subject of this commentary. Rainbows are caused by the refraction of light through water vapor. In other words, water that has not yet condensed into raindrops, but are these cloud droplets. When the angle of viewing is correct, the refraction of light through the water vapor divides colors into a pattern of a visible rainbow. The amount of water needed to form a rainbow is not sufficient at that moment to form clouds. So, and this is from an article from the United States National Weather Service titled, How Do Rainbows Form? And this is all fascinating because we are told in the book of Genesis that rainbows apparently did not exist before the flood. In other words, rainbows were a post-flood creation of God. And by the way, let me mention an excellent article by Dr. Ernest Martin titled Creation of Life in Contemporary Times. It's available on the ASK website, and we have done a bite show on this article also, where Dr. Martin points out other post-flood creations that God has done, and during the time of the Old and even the New Testaments, and creations by God that are even going on today. Now, this information about rainbows is fascinating. As I said, allow me to describe a remarkable experience that I had about rainbows. One summer in college, I had the privilege to see a complete double rainbow. And by complete, I mean from horizon to horizon. I was cleaning for part-time money as a college student on the 12th floor of an apartment building overlooking a large lake in Lake Mendota in Madison, Wisconsin. I was facing west. And all of a sudden I was cleaning, and a strange color attracted my attention to look out the window. It was a strange lighting effect on the wall, and it made me turn around and open the blinds and look out the window. Just a stunningly beautiful sight was in front of me. The sun was soon to set, and the rain clouds were nearby. In a vivid pink, those clouds were reflected upon the water of the lake 12 stories below me. I was on the lake shore. The building was on the lake shore. And this was beautiful in itself. But what surprised me most was the display arrayed just in front of me. It was like it was made for me alone. But my attention was seized by a complete double rainbow, both of them reaching from horizon to horizon, one inside the other, of course, with intense and brilliant full colors, clearly delineated, even to the deepest violet. It was awesome. And I had a front row seat, so there was no furniture in the apartment. I just sat on the floor, because it was a patio door. I just sat down and watched the display. And, the internet article, How Rainbows Form, has a section titled, What Makes a Double Rainbow. But I remember saying to God and to myself in praise, almost praying, saying, author, because it was just amazing. And it was just a phenomena, a real physical phenomena. Unfortunately, I was alone, and I had no one to share this remarkable but natural light show experience with anyone. And I was grateful to have had a perfect vantage point high up with a full view of this display. And the sight continued while I watched it for several minutes.
That must have been awesome.
It was. And then the colors, of course, began to fade over a few minutes, and the rainbow slowly disappeared, first the interior one and then the other one, as do all rainbows. And then the pink clouds, as the sun was setting, the pink of the clouds, diminished also. I never knew if anyone else saw it. If they were there on the lakeshore, they couldn't have missed it. But I had a even better view because I was on top. And I knew the scriptures well enough at that time in the 1970s to realize that God was speaking to me personally as he does to all mankind through rainbows. And this was not some type of mystical message, but part of God's creation. It was nonetheless personal because God communicates to every person who sees a rainbow, a single rainbow, not just a double rainbow, whether they realize it or not, that he is communicating with them. A rainbow is a sign to man from God, and this includes you and me. After the flood, God spoke to Noah about the covenant he was to make with mankind through Noah. And God's one-way covenant was to be signified by a rainbow. And as I said, this internet article, How Do Rainbows Form, has a section titled, What Makes a Double Rainbow? Quote, sometimes we see two rainbows at once. So what causes this? We have followed the path of a ray of light as it enters and is reflected inside the raindrop. But not all of the energy of the ray escapes the raindrop after it is reflected once. This is a function of light, also a creation of God. A part of the ray is reflected again and travels along a different path inside the drop to emerge from the drop at a different angle. And this is all the droplets within this piece of, within this framework of water vapor. Going back to this article text, the rainbow we normally see is called the primary rainbow and is produced from one internal reflection. The secondary rainbow arises from two internal reflections, and the rays exit the drop a second time at an angle of around 50 degrees, rather than the 42 degrees for the primary rainbow. This effect produces the secondary rainbow with the colors reversed from the primary rainbow. I don't remember the reversal. It could have been, I just don't remember. Okay. So, And another thing, too, some covenants that God creates are two-way agreements. Some are one-way agreements. God's covenant with Israel is such a two-way agreement, whereas both participants have an obligation to fulfill the covenant. A rainbow is a sign of God's one-way covenant with mankind. It will be fulfilled by him whether or not mankind acknowledges God or his covenant. And this is the way the mystery is. The new covenant is a two-way agreement, but the mystery is a one-way covenant with man. So let's go to Genesis 9, verses 8 to 17. I'm going to read from the Concordant Literal Version about God's covenant of giving the rainbow. Quote, "And as," this is God speaking, "and as for me, now I am setting up my covenant with you and with your seed," talking to Noah, "with your seed after you, with every living soul that was with you, flyer, domestic beast, and every wild animal of the earth that was with you, all that came forth from the ark, every animal of the earth, and I will confirm my covenant with you. Never again," and the confirmation means there will be a sign, "never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of a deluge, and never again shall there be a deluge to wreck the entire earth." Elohim further said, "This is the sign of the covenant that I am giving between me and you and every living soul that was with you for aeonian generations in the future. My bow I have set in a cloud, and it will be for a sign of the covenant between me and the earth, and it will occur when I make the sky cloudy over the earth with clouds, and my bow appears in a cloud. Then I will remember my covenant between me and you and every living soul among all flesh, so that never again shall the waters become a deluge to wreck all flesh. There will still be floods and tsunamis, but not the entire earth. When my bow comes to be in the cloud, I will see it to remember the aeonian covenant between Elohim and every living soul among all flesh which is on the earth." So Elohim said to Noah, "This is the sign of the covenant that I have set up between me and all flesh which is on the earth." End quote. Genesis 9, verses 8 to 17. Now God mentions this covenant again in Isaiah chapter 54, verses 9 to 10. But he does not mention the rainbow. In my opinion, the rainbow is implied in those two verses. In Ezekiel, we find that God adorns his traveling throne, his conveyance, his throne, which is a traveling conveyance. He adorns it with a rainbow. It successfully and completely awed the prophet Ezekiel, as it says in Ezekiel chapter 1, verse 28. In the King James Version, "As the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud in the day of rain, so was the appearance of the brightness round about," around his throne. "This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of Yahweh. And when I saw it, I fell upon my face." In vision, the Apostle John saw an emerald rainbow around God's throne in heaven in Revelation 4 and verse 3. Quote, and he sat, and he that sat was to look upon like a jasper and a sardine throne. And there was a rainbow round about the throne, in sight like unto an emerald, end quote. And the last mention of a rainbow in the Bible occurs when an angel comes from heaven and wears a rainbow like a cloud, like a crown. And this is in Revelation chapter 10 and verse 1. Quote, and I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, clothed with a crown, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head. And his face was as it were the sun, and his feet as pillars of fire. Now this angel is not Jesus, who's also described in Revelation chapter 1. But, because no angel can be the Son of God. And while we cannot know the full significance of the rainbows mentioned in Ezekiel and Revelation passages, we can be certain about rainbows in the sky. Next time you see a rainbow, as it says in the firmament, you can know that it is God's sign to you as an individual belonging to mankind. And you can accept that message as being personal to you from God. And God remembers, and so should you. Now let me ask the question. Were there rainbows before the flood? I don't think so. According to the account in Genesis, Genesis chapter 9 above that we quoted, rainbows were a post-flood creation of God. And how could such a thing be possible? If they existed pre-flood, why would their post-flood presence be unique? Why would that be a sign of a covenant if they always existed before the flood? Today...
Because the air was not pure? I don't know.
Or it was pure back then. Today, rainbows obey natural laws as shown in the internet articles listed in the footnotes above.
Yeah.
Dust particles which form the nucleus of each raindrop and snowflake are necessary for water vapor and for rainbows. Remember this fact when thinking about the situation before the flood. Now, it says in Genesis chapter 2, verses 5 and 6, For Yahweh God had not caused it to rain upon the earth, and there was not a man to till the ground. So one asks, how was the needed moisture distributed to plants? Going on in the verse. But there went up a mist from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground. In other words, dew. Now consider this. If there was dust in the air, then water vapor should have formed raindrops, assuming physics was the same then as it is now. It should have formed raindrops, ice crystals, and snow, just like today. Maybe not snow if there was a canopy of warmth. But the absence of rain before the flood and the presence of rain and rainbows after the flood can be explained by the fact that there was an insufficient quantity of dust in the atmosphere in the pre-flood world. No dust in the air, therefore no rain, and no snowflakes. Remember, rainbows are always associated with rain and clouds. Ezekiel understood this, just as we do today, when he said in Ezekiel 1 verse 28, as the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud in the day of rain. Is Ezekiel referring to Genesis? I think he was. By the way, the Hebrew word for bow in Genesis 9:13 and 14 and verse 16 and Ezekiel 1, verse 28, is the same word that identifies a bow shooting an arrow. And yet there's no ambiguity here in either the Genesis or the Ezekiel account, because both are clear in their meaning. The shape is what is being referred to in all instances of bow in the Old Testament, whether it means a bow of color in the sky or a bow that shoots an arrow. So the next question is, why would there be an absence of dust in the air? Well, what causes dust? Wind, volcanic activity, and a lack of moisture in a given area. Human and animal skin particles flaking off cause dust. Most of the dust in your house are skin particles. Just, you know, Google or Wikipedia the word dust, and it discusses that. All of these factors together contribute to dust, and of course pollen and other minute particles entering the atmosphere. Now, in Genesis 2 and verse 7, and we know there was dust on the ground, because Genesis 2 and verse 7 says, "And Yahweh formed man of the dust of the ground, and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul." So we know there was dust in Eden. He formed man of that dust and placed Adam in the garden in Eden. And man's purpose was to till the soil. There likely was dust all over the earth, so what suppressed atmospheric dust? Some creation researchers wonder if the air pressure was greater in the pre-flood world than it is today. And this is surmised from the large size of animals, both reptiles and apparently mammals, that lived before the flood, and the huge size of some insects that were apparently before the flood. You know, dragonflies with wingspans of 2.5 to 3 feet. If the oxygen content and the air pressure were greater than today, it would be much easier for huge animals to breathe. But higher air pressure would actually precipitate the dust to the surface and hold the dust to the ground, decreasing the volume of dust and pollen in the atmosphere, and hence preventing raindrops or snowflakes. Of course, probably snowflakes did not occur till after the flood. So that's the article, George Ann. Just some ideas and toying with some ideas about rainbows and the flood.
Well, it's interesting. Very yeah. Interesting. Gosh.
And when you put it all together from the scripture, it makes sense and sort of ties together.
Yeah, it does. My goodness, David.
Not only that, but remember when the flood occurred, you had these huge fountains of water,
mm-hmm.
which some researchers say was so much under pressure from beneath the mantle of the earth that they may have gone into orbit.
Oh, my goodness.
And that would put a lot more precipitation, which would cause the rain.
Yeah.
And those fountains were probably very hot geysers.
Ooh.
And, of course, the disruption of the earth from that event, and probably accompanying volcanoes, which either occurred before or after the flood, or during or after the flood, may have also... Of course, you know, it doesn't take a lot of volcanoes to put a lot of dust in the air.
Boy, that's for sure. Oh.
Because when did God give the rainbow? It was sometime after the flood. I just don't recall exactly how long. And so given the nature of rainbows today and the fact that there weren't any rainbows, and we have the express statement that there were no rainbows. God himself said that. Why? Because rainbows were given as a specific sign. So if you see a rainbow, God is speaking to you and to every other human being, saying that no longer will he ever bring a flood to destroy man. I wonder if he'll do something similar after Christ returns. Some other sign to mankind about the destruction before Christ's second coming, because the population of the earth will probably be 95% lower after God takes out his anger on the earth. But he won't kill as many as he did in the flood. All but eight.
You know, David, that's hard to believe, because if you go down to the Brazilian jungles, I can't see those people being offspring of Noah.
Oh, I can. They have human DNA, which is different than, you know, other species.
And there's so many different blood types. I mean, my goodness.
Maybe blood types separate after, you know, period of time. I don't know. You know, your DNA does change after you're born. And it continues to change all through life. So that if you would have a child early in life and a child later in life, your DNA would be different. Most people don't. There's a technical term, my wife knows, I don't, about that distinction. And, you know, but they're saying now, even the evolutionists say that there was a single race, Adam and Eve. Now, the Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon, I just don't know enough about that to discuss it at this point. Cro-Magnons are larger than Neanderthal, and even larger than us. Not quite giant, but they're considerably larger and more robust in their skull's capacity. Of course, we know that, you know, skull capacity doesn't indicate more brilliance, but at the beginning it probably did have a factor. And of course, if you eat better and your genetics are perfect, you definitely will have a greater capacity for memory, you know, close to total recall. Everybody that you encounter would be of close to total recall. Remember also, the world was probably one continent, and also the mountains were probably not as tall as they are today.
That's a good point.
Because now we have deep, deep ocean valleys.
Trenches.
And they hold a lot of the water.
Yes, they sure do.
And plus there was uplift after the flood, probably in the time of Peleg or soon after, which separated the continents, I think, rather quickly. I can't demonstrate it, but you know, that's what Peleg means. Means division, not just of the languages, but also of the physical territory and the peoples. So that you know, maybe that happened after Babel. It's difficult to tell from the text, or at the same time, or within a, you know, certain time period. But you had uplift and sinking, actually, so that together, you know, the earth might not have been as large. Now, Dr. Martin has an idea, as we went through in 101 Bible Secrets, that the flood itself was local, but the killing effect was worldwide for all air-breathing animals. I don't know about whales, but, you know, so that if the effect was total, but the flood itself took place only in the valley. And the reason is the Hebrew reads like you know, all the mountains were covered. Well, Mount Hood in Portland, Oregon, is covered with snow.
Yeah.
But that does not mean that the snow is above or near the summit of Mount Hood.
Yeah.
You know, talk to creationists and you can start a good argument, a good-natured argument about that.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's fun to go around and around on this stuff because, you know, it doesn't really matter, and you're not, neither one of you are denying scripture, although one of you might. But, you know, that's what Dr. Martin's understanding of the text was. And I haven't quite come to a conclusion myself yet, whether the world was, you know, one week I'll take one view and another week I'll take the other view. Because, you know,
yeah,
we weren't there, any of us. We have scripture to go by, which is true, but we might not be quite understanding it correctly.
Yeah.
And that's our problem. That's not, you know, scripture's problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a fascinating subject. But the thing that we are given some information on is the rainbow. Because God wanted to communicate to us through the scripture that he's communicating to us through rainbows. And it's a good thing to tell a child. You know,
yeah.
Oh, look, God's telling us.
Yeah.
Giving us a message.
That's sweet.
And their eyes will... How does that work?
Yeah.
Well, just read them Genesis.
Yeah.
And then they'll take it to school and they'll have an argument with the teacher.
Yeah, and get thrown out. Oh,
that's okay.
Some schools, I'll tell you, they aren't even schools. They're just, they're terrible. Well, thank you, David. And
sure.
God bless everybody out there that's listening and paying attention. Good night, everybody.